I do this for my culture, 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 culture.
Peace, welcome back to For the Culture. Happy New Year! That's right. It is 2018. Thank you so much for riding with me here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. The voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Tonight, we're going to have a fantastic show. We're going to talk a little bit about what's been happening, continuing the conversation from my great esteemed colleague, Dr. K, as we talk about what's been happening in our city, because we found it to be very important here at WEAA, and we're listening to you as the community, as to what do we do, how do we move forward, what are some of the contributing factors, but most importantly, not playing the blame game, but most importantly, how do we get ourselves in a different place for 2018? Now, I know some of us, we've already made the resolution individually. However, have we made the collective resolution that we're going to do our best to be agents and provocateurs of peace? That's the question. Are we going to do our best to be change agents of peace in the city of Baltimore this year, where we're going to start to intervene in the violent affairs? And I'm not saying this to put anyone in harm's way. Certainly not advising you to do that. What I am advising, though, is that we take a little bit more of a proactive approach in becoming sometimes mediators as well as a proactive approach in being able to resolve some of these long-standing issues. Now, a lot of times, here's the thing. There's this idea that's out there, and certainly I'm not a psychologist in the traditional sense. I just play one on the radio. But no, there are many schools of thought, so sociology, psychology, and whatnot. And the school of thought is often that if there is small issues that are exposed, then they continue to be large issues. So we see, you know, a lot of times we see these extremes. We see, you know, the outliers of certain circumstances, the outliers of certain conditions that are overexposed to make us feel like that's the majority versus the reality of it being the minority. Now, here in the city of Baltimore, we know that the feeling, the sentiment is that Baltimore, well, supposedly that Baltimore is a violent city. However, if you grew up in Baltimore, if you have family, you have friends, you know, you can really live a long, healthy life in Baltimore City. It doesn't mean that just because you grew up from Baltimore that you came out of the womb ducking bullets. It doesn't happen that way. But what it does mean is that we are in a culture of violence that we can't escape. And we certainly can't just place the onus of responsibility on the shoulders of the police, on the mayor, city council people, school superintendents, all of these folks, right? The folks that are serving as stewards of the community, stewards of the city. However, what we should kind of focus on is like, okay, how do we change some things? How do we get back to a place where we're not looking for others outside of ourselves to change our condition, but we go within ourselves to use our great intellectual resources, financial resources, our collective power to create a new Baltimore, especially for 2018. How do we get out of that victim standpoint, right? That victim mindset to now taking a more proactive approach to saying that enough is enough? How do we engage those part of the communities that we've often disregarded as being the quote unquote the troublemakers? How do we start to build with them, to relate to them? How do we talk to these older brothers that have been a part of the street culture for so many years and try to get them to start to say, hey, isn't the enough is enough? I mean, this is going to be a real problem, not just for me as a resident, but for you as a resident as well, as you might have family and you might have sons and daughters. Because I truly, truly don't believe, and this is my belief, you can challenge me on it, but I don't agree with you if you tell me. I don't believe that even if you are a quote-unquote troublemaker, if you're the one doing the violence, that you want to raise your children, those who are after you, in the same vein. Who wants to do that? Who wants to give children the same values of not seeing life as valuable? There is a reason for the violence. There's a reason for the homicides. There is a reason for the disrespect of life. There's a reason for the distrust. There's a reason. And as crazy as it sounds, there is a human being behind that reason. Now, given that, there still needs to be some ways to address these issues. Certainly, I'm not advocating for us to live in this utopian world where we say, you know what, we don't need police. Or on the other side of it, that we need a lot of police, and then we don't need community involvement. The police are only as strong as their community. Let me say that again. The police is only as strong as the city or the community they serve. You have a weak city, weak community, you have a weak police department. You have a corrupt city, or those who are corrupted, and I'm not saying corrupted in just terms of financial corruption, but I'm saying corrupted in terms of values and morals and whatnot. If you have those type of corruptions, then the leadership is going to reflect that, unfortunately. Because those who come through the ranks of whether it's City Hall, Police Department, whatever institution of the city, they come from, guess what? The people. That's right. They come from the same group of people that the city is serving. You can outsource as many people as you want to and try to bring it in. But Baltimore, you know one thing is for sure. You and I both know. Let's be super honest here, Baltimore. You and me, let's have a little chit-chat here. You and I both know that when it comes to folks coming in from the outside, we don't work too well with that, especially when folks from the outside tell us how to go about doing anything relating to something so close and so personal as to how we should live, the best way we should live. We don't take too personal to things like that. So if we're going to be honest with one another, if we're going to be true to one another, but most importantly, if we're going to be just to one another, especially for the new year, for 2018, then that means that we should have this, we should be in this space of being able to really reflect, reexamine, reevaluate, assess what has been happening, ask the big and hard questions. Has our response been really good? Has it been a great response? Has it been a response that has garnered us the type of results that we want, the type of results that we need, the type of results that we deserve? If not, then guess what? You know what the old saying is? The meaning of the word insanity is doing the same thing, expecting different results. And at this point in our long, unending struggle to fight the violence, stop the violence in the great city of Baltimore, we are at this place, and we have to be honest. Are we insane because we're expecting different results, even though we're doing the same thing? Or are we going to move out of a place of insanity and go into a place of sanity and wholeness and be proactive in our thinking? What does 2018 have in store? I don't want to hear, well, I'm just tired of violence. I'm tired of the violence. I'm tired of the violence. There are people behind the violence. How do we shift the culture from a culture of violence to a culture of peace? Tonight, we're going to talk a little bit about it. That's my two cents, and I hope you're counting it. We're going to get into the conversation. Plus, I'm going to share with you some of the things that other cities are doing that have had long-standing issues of violence, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C. I'll tell you about what they're doing and how you can still be a part of that plan. You heard our mayor on the line last week. She talked about her stance. Certainly, we need to pray. No doubt about that. But then we need to pray, then get up and do something to change the condition, the culture, the quality of life of our community. So, look. We're going to take a quick pause. Leo, Travis, I got you. You're going to start off the conversation tonight. But tonight we're talking about it, making sure that we are all on the same page, kicking 2018 off on a great note as we start to talk about stopping the violence in the city of Baltimore. Stay with me. Whole lot coming up in this first hour for the culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. We'll be right back.
I do this for my culture.
Peace, welcome back to For the Culture, right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM. And WEAA.org, the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you for riding with me this evening. Second day of the new year, 2018. It has been upon us. And tonight we're talking about what you've been talking about. Everybody's been talking about Happy New Year, but then we're like, Happy New Year. We live in Baltimore. People are going to get murdered. That's not a good place to start the new year. But the reality is this is where we are. And so the culture has to be penetrated in order for us to find some light, not only at the end of the tunnel, but some light to change the folks' thinking, to see that there is a way to get out of this. There is a way. There is a way. I know what the numbers say. The numbers say that the last year, as we just ended 2017, the count was 343 homicides, the second most in a single year. I got that. And the most per capita in city history. Ooh, got that, because check this out. The city suffered 353 homicides, according to the statistics, in 1993, but had about 100,000 more residents. We're about 620,000 residents. We had 720,000 residents in 1993. That's about 25 years ago. And we suffered 353 homicides in 1993. Isn't that something? That's amazing. I want to put out something there as well, because I think it's interesting that as we have this conversation, I know what some of you thinking, we need more police. Okay, I got you. Mm-hmm. We need more police. Jane Miller put out this tweet the other day. I think it was yesterday. Jane Miller from WBAL-TV. She put out this interesting fact that I wanted to share with you, which is that even though we have as a city, check this out, spent $7.3 billion on policing in the city of Baltimore, and I'm going to give you that year, how long we've been spending money like that. $7.3 billion on policing since 1998. And the unfortunate reality is that the patterns of violence, as Jane Miller put it out, has remained unchanged. 313 homicides in 1998, 343 homicides in 2017, $7.3 billion on policing. I think we're at a point of insanity, folks. I think we're at that point. Doing the same thing, expecting different results. Okay, I think we're at that point. And I know that people I know that people are wondering what to do. I'm not trying to tell us to what to do in terms of, you know, making us feel bad for believing a certain thing. But after a while, we got to say, is it working? All right, let's go back to the phone line and say what you got to say. 410-319-8888. I'm not trying to be Mr. Gloom and Doom here. But if you want to have the conversation, I think we need to have the conversation having a full context of what we're getting into. $7.3 billion since 1998, and we're still over 300-something homicides. I think we need to shift some money to some other ways to start to address the violence issue in Baltimore. Don't you? I think so. All right, let's hear from you. 410-319-8888. All right, Leo, talk to me. What are your thoughts?
Brother Faraji Muhammad, good evening. How are you?
Good evening, Leo. I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Happy New Year one more time to you and everybody.
Yes, sir.
Well, Jane Miller's right. She says she gives the figures. It seems as though we're in a police state because the police get most of the money, at least from the city coffers, the city budget. They're budgeted in such a way they get more money than education, the school system, or job. Kinds of things, job creation kinds of things. You remember Sparrows Point, Bethlehem Steel?
Yes, sir.
All right. When they, at that point in time, when they went out of business some years ago, we had people who, they weren't college graduates, but they could buy a house. This was manufacturing. I'm not sure that we're putting enough emphasis on manufacturing. People are telling us that the manufacturing jobs are gone. They're gone overseas. Why are they going overseas? Because the Democratic and Republican Party wants them to go overseas. And the Greater Baltimore Committee and the Baltimore Development Corporation, rich folks want them to go overseas, and they continue to line their pockets in the Cayman Islands and other offshore locations. So I guess what I'm saying is, if most of the violence is related to the drug trade, if I say 85, 90% of the violence in our societies related to the drug trade, what is the economic way forward? What is the economic path forward? And I've said before, and I'll say it again, I still think apprenticeship programs, job training, and placement of people in jobs. You know, we got Port Covington, we got a whole lot of things we talked about, and it's all just hanging on the limb of a tree. But in terms of hard statistics and facts, in terms of the mayor's office of economic development or anybody's office of economic development, how do we channel for those men and women, those persons between the ages of 17 and 24, let's say, or older, how do we channel them into a job? The mayor said that in July of this year, she's bringing a program here called ROCA to deal with the violence that's here. Well, what's going to happen between now and between January and July? Again, economics, can you train people who have an eighth grade education and can read well enough to be trained for the building trades, for trades? Yes, you can. But I don't know that there's evidence, and maybe you have statistics, I don't. But I don't know that there's any evidence that we're getting it done fast enough and that we're using our mobile units and our technology to sit at North and Pennsylvania and other hot spots in this city to grab those who are willing to learn and who want to be helped. We've got to provide them a stipend so that they can have food and clothing and shelter while they're seeking a new life. And I don't see that kind of direction going forward. I don't see the initiative happening. I hear the talk, but if you can cite, or anybody, any of your callers, what's happening in that regard specifically, given the racism of the unions in our society, please tell me. And I think there are answers. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not pessimistic at all. But look at the squeegee boys in our city. They're doing windshields. You say they don't want to work. That's not my impression. A whole lot of black people and black people want to work. But we've got to have a plan of how to get them the supplemental assistance that they need so that we can stair-step them into jobs. Whether it be carpentry or electrician or pipe fitting or plumbing or something basic, so they can feed themselves while they work toward going to college or sustaining themselves.
All right, Leo, that's you're bringing up some valid points, and I think, and I'm gonna put that challenge out to the callers. We got to put that challenge out. All right, Travis, talk to me. What are your thoughts?
Yes, you know, I just want to say grace, peace, and much blessings to you and everyone. And
you
happy
too, brother.
New Year. You know, we must be a city of we, not the city of I and me. People must stop being selfish. People who have must help those who do not have, but help those who really want to better their life, because not everyone wants to better themselves, but there are a majority of these young men and women that are in these communities want to better themselves. And we must come together and develop holistic opportunities for our people. We must put up or shut up. We are in a new year. We must put our money where our mouths are, because everybody talk about insanity. Insanity, like you said, they're doing the same thing over and over, thinking you're going to get a result. You know, Matthew 25, 35 through 46, Titus 2, 1 through 8, and 2 Chronicles 7:14, a holistic courage and solution. The black church and the political powers of this city state must invest holistically into the community. I didn't know that Governor Hogan had a side job as a man of magic, because when Officer Souter was killed, he put up $100,000 real quick. I want to know where is the $100,000.
You said he has a side job?
Real quick for the community. And for Roger, we already had 2 homicides.
I know.
You know.
I know. So we're going to check on the. I got to check to see if the governor has a side job. Never heard that one, Travis.
Yeah, he has a side job, but he's able to put up $100,000 real quick.
I mean, he could be a part of his personal pay. I mean, he could be. It doesn't have to be a side job. I mean, he is the governor.
Yeah, I mean, $100,000 just like that, which, you know, no.
He's been doing a lot. Travis, he's been doing a lot of business before he became governor. But I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying, though.
Nobody came forward to say Little JoJo killed Officer Cedar, because we know that Little JoJo didn't kill Officer Cedar.
That's fine. But that's fine.
It is crazy how did they come up with money for what they want to come up with money.
Gotcha.
Yes, or can't
gotcha.
Come up with money for the community, the Dollar House program, and this and that.
Gotcha. Hey, Travis, thank you so much for checking in. Always appreciate it. Okay, Ayanna, Thomas, Kyle, Angel, Donna, got you. We got to take a quick pause. When we come back, more of your thoughts as we talk about next steps. I'm still talking about solutions. I'm still talking about let's get out of this place of insanity, because we keep doing the same thing, expecting different results. That's what I'm talking about. 2018, 2 murders already? Come on, Baltimore. Come on. Plus, I'm going to throw out some more statistics for you to give you some context. But don't let these statistics color your perception of the city. There are so many great things that are happening, so many things that are happening. Ceasefire weekend is coming back up this February, right? So you can't just say, oh, nobody's doing nothing. Nobody's doing nothing. Question is, what are you doing? We'll continue to talk about it. Stay with me. 410-319-8888. It's For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org, the voice of the community. We'll be right back. Welcome back to For the Culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. We're talking about how we get from start the year off in a peaceful way, even though we got 2 homicides. And I'm not downplaying that at all, but it doesn't have to be. You know what I mean? You know, it's like at this point in the game. We're not going to talk about the Ravens game right now. We're not going to talk about that. But it's like, you know, you might get a couple of points ahead of you, but that's only in the first quarter. We're still in the very, very first few minutes of the game here, folks. It doesn't mean that, oh, well, all efforts should just be thrown off. It's over. It's going to be a high homicide year. It doesn't have to be that. It really doesn't. What it can be, though, is just a constant reminder that we got to work harder, work smarter, and certainly we got to work more efficiently to save lives. Let's go back to the lines here, what you got to say. 410-319-8888. Thomas, talk to me.
Hey, Roger, how are you, man?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Oh, man, happy new year to you guys.
You too, brother.
Listen, let me go ahead and put it where the goats can get it.
Come on now.
Since everybody else wants to have a kumbaya moment, okay? I don't care what kind of Bible scriptures you quote. This is the real world out here nowadays, okay?
Mm.
I'm going to say this, Faraji.
Yep.
You have 1,380 murders under this current police commissioner, Kevin Davis. Since his tenure, he's got 1,380 murders under his tenure, and he still has his job. Okay?
Right.
Now, I can't blame these murders on him. I can't blame these murders on the police department. But what I will say, I'll tell you who can solve this problem for us. We need a sheriff in office who's not drunk every day, okay, who can get the job done. The this strategy relies with our sheriff department. Did you know the sheriff office is the chief law enforcement officer of the city of Baltimore?
Yeah. Yep.
So you're familiar with that?
Yep.
So do you think this current sheriff that we have in office is doing his job? Or put it this way, is the sheriff department today being maximized to its fullest potential?
Hey, Thomas, I haven't heard a word from the sheriff's department.
Your guess is as good as mine. Maybe we need to go down to Club Melville's down there where he's known to frequent every day and ask him, why won't he get up and do something? And God forbid you, this mayor is coming into office. I hear her talk about, you know, the $1 billion she helped bring for schools, the $6 million in private funds that she had, you know, secured for this new ROCA program. Well, you know, but she's not telling you who's giving her this private fund. Yeah, she mentioned Bloomberg and the $5 million that he's given for police technology and stuff. The police department in Baltimore City is funded damn near is better than your Secret Service is funded.
Right.
They got just as much money as your U.S. Secret Service.
Thomas, I'm about to put you on pause right there. You're saying a lot, man. You are saying a lot. Thank you so much for checking in, as always, and indefinitely for tuning in. Saying a lot. And I know people will say, hey, Faraji, they're getting a lot of money. We'll talk a little bit more about it. All right, 410-319-8888. Kyle, talk to me.
Good evening, Faraji. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Fantastic. I'm glad that you prefaced your program with the insanity analogy, you know, because it's going to take a total different perspective to change.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about more police officers and everything, but what do we want to turn this into, a police state? You know, we have to look more from a holistic perspective, you know, social economics, somebody else spoke about, you know, from a spiritual perspective, and I'm not necessarily talking about religion, but I'm just talking about people in the community showing love and compassion for each other.
That's right.
You know, from a mental status, a lot of people in this city, you know, our mental statuses are not, you know, what they should be. So, you know, this problem, I mean, police are basically reactive force. It's not a proactive force. But until the community starts getting proactive, until the government starts to rely on more proactive programs to make the city more prosperous as far as our communities, because that's where we have to start with the small and build up towards the bigger picture. Until we do that, when the murder rate is going to go up and up and up.
You know what? And Kyle, I appreciate you for putting that in a holistic perspective, because I believe you're exactly right. I think that at the end of the day, there has to be this kind of step back and taking a look at all of the contributing factors of how we got to this place. Because it's not just simply, Rashid wants to shoot somebody or Lil Man wants to come up on Pookie. This is a whole system. And we understand this. Here, folks, you know this. You already know this. And there are reasons that these young brothers and these little sisters are deciding to take this course of action. You already know that. Now we're in this space of what are we going to do about it? And I'm not asking them for what are we going to do about it in terms of, like, just throwing any over idea, because there are already some operating programs that are already working, that are already doing some things in the city. But there is a multi-pronged approach that is needed. Kyle, thank you so much for checking in. Hey, Donna, talk to me. What are your thoughts?
How you doing, Shirazi?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. Well, first of all, insanity is based on oppression. And when our oppressors keep us oppressed, that's where the consistency continues. When you're dealing with oppressed people, like Dr. Frances Welsinger said, she was a well-known black psychiatrist, and she made it clear that until we look at the whole system of white supremacy and how it affects us, we're not going to understand how it affects us to the point where we are, we're traumatized. So we are a traumatized group of people that are oppressed, that are depressed, and that are suffering from trauma. And if we don't heal and deal with that and have that type of discussion, we're not going to correct the problem. See, it's an internal problem by external problems that are insane. Mm. So the external problems, the external oppressors are the ones that are insane, who are oppressing a wide spectrum of people globally. It's not just the United States. It's not just Baltimore. It's a global conspiracy against people.
Right.
So we have to look at it a lot deeper.
So what would you suggest? I mean, right now we're at this point where, and I'm looking at other cities, Los Angeles, they have a community policing program that they have enacted. They've actually just recently applied for $3 million from the federal government to get some money, but the federal government denied their request in LA. But they've established a community policing program. We don't have a community policing program in Baltimore.
I look at it from a humanistic perspective.
Okay.
And what Dr. Welsing said, and she used to come on and call all across the country, because I used to follow her, go to Howard, and go to her lectures. And her solution was, we got to deal with the mothers.
Okay.
Who have children. She said, if we can eradicate the system of abuse, oppression, and whatever by getting to single mothers who have children, she said, we could eradicate this in one generation if we focus on the mothers and the children.
Fantastic.
In that perspective, she said, we can eradicate. And I think more people need to go and pull up her tapes and her speeches, because she had the solution. No one listened. Now
gotcha.
She's gone, and now you can see the repercussions of what's going on today.
Oh, Donna, thank you so much for checking in. You could probably say that. I'm sure we could say that for all of our great heroes and sheroes. They've had solutions, from Dr. King to the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad to Malcolm X. I mean, they've had solutions. They had solutions. But all I'm going to say is that insanity. All right, Angel, talk to me. Thank you for your patience. What are your thoughts as we talk about how to stem or how to stop the homicide rate in Baltimore? Yes.
I got a few things to say, and
come
I'm trying to be as brief as I possibly can.
Thank you so much, Angel.
So, first, I agree kind of with what the last caller was saying, Donna. You know, we do need to start with the single mothers and the children. That's part of it, but I think it's a lot bigger than that, right? So let's look at a couple different things. Let's look at the music that we're listening to. How do we learn? Right? How we learn to write our name? We keep writing it, right?
Yeah.
Repetition. So we keep hearing music that's telling you drugs is okay. Oh, it's all about this glamorous lifestyle. It don't matter what jobs you bring in here, unless those jobs provide the glamorous lifestyle that these kids are seeing on TV, that they think, you know, that's how they need to be living and without working for it, because that's how these other people got it. It don't matter what jobs you bring to the city. They don't want those jobs. So let's start with that.
I like
it.
I like
it. Right? Then the next issue is, see, when I was young, right, and I did something up the street, first I get in trouble with the lady at the street that's looking out the window. Then I go home, right? And then I get in trouble there, too, because she's the lady that was looking out the window then already called my grandmother before she called me in her house to get a butt-whooping there and then to go home and get a butt-whooping, too. See, the problem is too many people, or too many children, too, have too much power.
Mm.
And I agree that children's voices and ideas and thoughts should be heard. I'm a mother of two. I agree with that wholeheartedly. But in that, we are losing the respect for authority because they feel that they deserve just as much respect. And I'm sorry, you only been here 11 years. You ain't going to get as much respect as somebody who's been here 40. And let's be real. The respect for authority is not there. And that's why young boys are shooting at grandmothers because they threw chicken bones in their yard and the grandmother got something to say about it. There's no respect or deference for our elderly and for people in authority.
Gotcha. Right? So that respect for authority, that speaks volumes there, right there, Angel.
Respect for authority is number one.
Right.
Music, exposure, and media. And obviously that's something that we can't really do. But when you got people riding, you know, people are riding around their cars with their kids in the back, and they think it's cute. They singing all these songs, not realizing you're ingraining that into your child.
Wow. Angel, thank you so much for checking in. Oh, man, that's something for us to certainly think about. Ayana, talk to me. Ayana?
Hello?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for your patience. What are your thoughts about this?
Sorry about that.
No problem.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm listening. I'm a teacher in Baltimore City.
Powerful. Thank you.
I've called before, and this year I'm actually teaching African-American studies at my school. And today we had, you know, we're just getting back acclimated for the second half of the school year. And part of the conversation that we talked about, we have advisory at our school. So we basically have a time in the morning to have discussions in small groups with students and do activities that are team building and whatnot. Over the break, I got a chance to watch Baltimore Rising on HBO. And just looking at, you know, we're coming up on the anniversary of the uprising that happened, I feel like we've got to put in systems in place and programs in place where we can really empower the youth, because that's really where the change is going to come from, as the lady just said who called. Like, it's got to be something to where we are putting into those people those foundational principles, you know what I mean? Kwanzaa just ended where we're talking about all these fruits, right?
Yep.
That if we plant these seeds, they're going to be harvested. I think what happens is, like, there's situations. I've been in Baltimore. I'm originally from Jersey, a Morgan grad, but I've been here.
That's what I'm talking about, Ayana. Uh-huh.
Almost 20 years and in the school system. And I feel like there's events that happen, and it's like people talk about it, and there's a, you know, a big uproar, and then it kind of goes dead. And I like you said, there's things going on, but apparently we're not – there's not enough information, and I know the WEAA, I appreciate what happens here and the dissemination of information, but we've got to go back to, like, some grassroots Black Panthers vibe where we have a meeting. Like, I'm serious. Like, we need to have meetings with community leaders, teachers, pastors, churches, you know, community leaders to come together to really strategize, and there needs to be a youth council. There needs to be groups of young people that get together and really strategize, going back to these ideas, because, like, really, it can happen, but we got to be galvanized.
And, well, you know what, Ayana, and I'm glad, and I like all your ideas. A couple of things is there is the Youth Commission that is under the management of Baltimore City government that was established by Mayor Sheila Dixon, but has continued through Mayor Blake and all the way now through Mayor Pugh. So there's a youth commission of about 13 or 14 young people who are designated or who have been representing various councilmatic districts that sit on that commission. So that conversation needs to be important. It needs to include them. But what you're talking about in terms of galvanizing and organizing, I mean – And that's you're saying like a Black Panther. That's exactly what is getting us the whole, you know, getting back to that place of how do we start to organize on a community level, right, into our neighborhoods. It's if you're talking about in Harlem Park, if you're talking about in Guilford, if you're talking about in Barkley, doesn't matter. How do you organize in community levels? How do you reconnect with the neighbors and whatnot, right? Because at the end of the day, we all fundamentally want the same thing. That's what I don't think a lot of people understand.
Absolutely.
So what you're bringing up is some absolutely good points. And real quick, as a teacher, do you feel like the school system, are they doing, are there plans for them to do more community engagement programming for students that have been impacted by violence in the city?
So I'm at a charter school. There's some leeway in a sense.
Okay.
But to be completely honest with you, I think as long as it serves the purpose of the organization, then they're willing to kind of look into some way, if that makes sense. Like a couple of years, you know, when Eric Gardner, before the uprising, right, some teachers and myself in administration, we had felt the kids had voiced to us that they wanted to protest. They wanted to, you know, Black Lives Matter. This is like right on the cusp of that.
Yes, ma'am.
And so we did a demonstration, and let me tell you, it was not an easy thing to do. I mean, from every side, it was a lot of pushback on it happening. You know what I mean? To get those students' voices to be able to ring out for justice. And so my point is, I feel like there are systems in place. There are schools that do have pockets, right, of support for students that have been through that. But in terms of really dealing with the trauma, really dealing with trying to make solution-oriented strategies, like it's kind of hit or miss, or it's happening. Wherever it's happening, the communication, like you said before, it's not like I mean, like you said, we have to do something. We can talk about it, but we have to kind of each play a part. You know what I mean? Like,
And Ayanna, I appreciate that. I'm going to get to my other calls, but here's what I would recommend. I would highly recommend that you reconnect with those, your colleagues, your administrators, and see if the school board, and I'm just putting this out there on a public level, let's force the school board to create a community trauma support service for our students. So that way, those who have been impacted don't go out back into the communities and then become perpetrators after they just became victims. So if we do a community trauma support services for students within the school system, I don't care if it's never been done. Don't care about, we don't have the money. You got the money. Isn't it interesting? People always have the money for the things that they want. So I would highly encourage you, Ayanna, if we can get some folks like yourself and others to get the ball rolling. As much pushback as it is, change is never easy. But if we start that process, I'm sure it could be impactful. And you can't. And the only thing you got to tell the school board or anybody that give you pushback is you must don't live in the city. Ayanna, thank you so much for checking in.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Rasheed from Laurel, thank you so much for your patience and checking in. Talk to me, man. Rasheed?
Hey, Assalamu alaikum, brother Faraj.
Wa alaikum salam.
Your show's doing wonderful.
Thank you, brother.
Something I wanted to chime in about the murder rate was the simple fact that jobs.
Right.
Honestly, the thing is that, you know, I am one of the individuals who you were reporting on a few months ago when you were saying that a good chunk of the positions, the jobs in Baltimore are being outsourced to people that are outside of the city.
Mm.
Something that I actually saw myself, I had to look, you know, you were talking, I had to actually just take a look at my own situation. You know, you guys were talking about how, you know, contracting jobs and permanent jobs, full-time positions, they keep getting given, they're being given to people that live outside the city, and that's taking money away from the city, but more so than just taking away, you know, a few jobs that pay $38,000 or $45,000 a year. The thing is that that's money that could be used to being paid for housing. And when you guys had the chance to change your minimum wage into $15 an hour, you know, your government, the powers that be in the city, you know, they backtrack, you know. So, you know, the thing is that you guys are not underfunded. In fact, you guys have what looks like the lion's share of money going into the city. The thing is that the people who are supposed to be allocating that money, you know, dispersing it to the proper programs and groups are, you know, their pockets are just getting fatter and fatter. You know,
right.
It's that trickle-down economics.
Right.
Like,
no.
I don't know what the brother was that just called in a few minutes, well, more than a few minutes ago, but I don't know what the brother's name was, but he was saying that the mayor found a whole bunch of money, you know, and, you know, we're all shocked and chagrined at where she found it. I'm like, ain't no mystery about where she found it. Every year you guys have a budget that keeps saying more money going to the police department, which I have honestly never seen a problem that I was able to punch my way out of. So I don't know why y'all keep giving more money to the police department, especially with murders going up. I would think that's indicative of them not doing their jobs properly. You need to cut their funding versus giving them more money, because what happens when the murders go down? Are they going to get more money anyway? You know, so it's going to be, I mean, honestly, like, you know, so
now
it's going to
be, question.
You know, you're going to get more money if you don't do your job, even more money if you do do your job. So there has to be something changing right there. But, you know, my whole thing about it was the fact that, you know, we're the wealthiest nation this country's ever seen. You know, we have no issue with money. We print our own money. We quite literally just printed out $1.5 trillion to give to the wealthiest of Americans. We have no issue with money. We have an issue with allocation of the funds that we are printing. I mean, you know, what's a few more decades that every American got to give $1,000 more out their yearly taxes? We're already giving $675 of it to a $595 billion a year war industry. My thing is this, is like, it just got jumped up by another $800 million. It just got jumped up by another $80 billion. I'm sorry, that was way too low. You know, and my thing is that it's allocation of funds.
That's it.
So something that I think that would do the best job ever is if you guys actually, you know, went over your books and just looked at where the money's getting spent. I mean, look at the DNC, you know, the Democratic National Committee, you know, they were, you know, they're like, oh, we're having the worst fundraising year ever. And it's like, well, you guys just had $2 billion. What happened to it? Well, 75% of the money went to five people.
Right.
75% of all of their money went to five people.
Right.
That is the type of corruption that I'm talking about. So,
right.
You know, when
right.
you get people that they're just talking out the side of their neck saying, oh, I'm just shocked and chagrined. I don't know where the money's going. They know where the money's going. And, you know, even a fifth grader, you know, with some basic arithmetic, you know, and a long enough time, can, you know, with some Ritalin, I guess, can sit down
Rasheed,
and read through these numbers.
I appreciate it, and you're absolutely right. That's where that, and thank you so much for checking in and giving us that insight from Laurel, being a resident of Laurel, man. And you know what? You're absolutely right. All right, Ernest, talk to me.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
First of all those officers that were involved in the Freddie Gray murder was given a reward. Miller is on the boats. Nero is in the airplane.
What do you mean a reward?
They're giving cushy jobs. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, you see, mean they still have their jobs.
They still have their jobs,
mm-hmm.
and they have cushy jobs. The guy that drove the wagon, the black guy that drove the wagon around for 45 minutes, he's worth watching the blue cameras. Now, can you imagine having an individual like that watching the blue cameras? So when he sees something's going wrong, that he can turn the camera off. And the female sergeant is teaching in the police academy. So they killed Freddie Gray, and there was no consequence criminally or departmentally. And this commissioner gave them a reward. And
well, you know what? I mean, look, I the only thing I can say is about that, Ernest, is that, you know, I mean, first thing, the unfortunate part is that even though Freddie Gray lost their lives, they weren't found in the court of law as being guilty. So that was that's certainly the department's view of how they want to move on. The department can't.
That's not always been the.
Yeah.
That wasn't the department's view when Donald Pomelo was here. Or Tom Frazier was here. You did something like that. I don't care what happened to you in the court of law.
Right.
You were getting fired.
Right.
Period.
Right. I hear
so,
you.
So, and the other thing is, we had these people talking about the sheriff. You need 3,500 sworn police to police the city. And with the corruption in the police department now, that has been going on since before 2010, where police were planting drugs,
gotcha,
sticking up people,
mm-hmm,
holding hostages, and all that, and hasn't. It's going to be resolved. It's going to be resolved because a lot of those police are going to jail.
But Aaron, thank you so much for checking. I got want to get my final call in about this. But here's the thing, folks. Here's the thing. The thing is, I'm not a police officer. So because I'm not a police officer, I can't take on those battles. And I think this is where the line gets fuzzy for a lot of folks. The line gets fuzzy because we're trying to play too many roles. We're trying to be in too many lanes. Let's stay in our lane of expertise, our lane of interest, and then say, okay, how can we start to work? If you're a pastor, don't try to be a police officer. Be a pastor. Talk to other pastors, right? Talk to other pastors and see, okay, let's come up with our violence prevention plan. The mayor has one. This police department has one. How could we never heard the churches and the mosques coming together and creating a violence prevention plan? Just a thought. But I can't be in everybody. I can't, you know, the only thing we can do is from my platform is let's have the conversation. But most importantly, let's start to generate the interest. Let's get people thinking a little bit differently so that way we don't seem insane. Edward, you got the final word on this. What are your thoughts? Edward?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Edward.
Look, the first thing I want to say to you, we don't know our nationality. They call us African American, and we are the true Hebrew Israelite of the Bible, Old Testament and New Testament.
All right, so check this out, Edwin. I got a few more moments. I want to give you your time. What do you think to address the violence?
What I'm saying here, we need to get together and stop all this talking, create jobs for our people, because the elite and the Illuminati, they are the one who control the money, and they are the one who control the city council. And as long as they keep on doing that,
Edward, I gotta stop you here. Hold on, Edward, I gotta stop you here, bro. I gotta stop you here, because at this point, you about to go into the stars with yours, man. You about to take me to the stars, Edward, and I ain't got my spacesuit on right now. Because at this point, look, if you say the Illuminati, if it could be anybody, it could be Captain Crunch running the city council. At this point, the onus of responsibility lies on us. If we're going to keep believing the same thing and expecting different results, then we need Captain Crunch as our leadership. That's all I'm going to say about that. We're going to take a quick pause. Get ready for the next 60 for the culture right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org, the voice of the community. Let's keep the peace, Baltimore.